Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to the Niler 9 podcast. You are listening to myself, Niler 9, and Andrea Cleary.
Hi. Hello.
always an extra beat in there that I'm like, is she here? Is she actually there? I'm looking at her. I can see she's looking at me. I see the mouth about to open, but sometimes it's like that there's so much in that silence there. I'm like,
it's me. I'm keeping you on your toes, making sure.
Yes,
making sure it's good. Okay,
we're counting.
Hi,
the beats.
Hello.
We're counting. How the beats. This is a music podcast, so we start off by doing that. How are you doing?
You were on the TV last night, Niall.
Yes, we're going to talk about that, but we'll also be talking about Saint Vincent's album, Daddy's Home, which is the sixth album from Annie Clark. That's our main draw tonight. But yes, I was the main draw on Virgin Media One last night, it seems. Not Melvin Benn or Holly Cairns or anyone like that. It was me.
Yeah.
Obviously.
No, you was representing the Niler.9.com.
Niler.9.com, yeah. As Matt Cooper called it, yeah. And Luno Club, I think he said, instead of Lumo Club.
Luno Club, yeah.
He did mention the podcast.
I thought you spoke brilliantly on the arts and the live music sector.
Thank you very much. Done. Yeah. I'm doing this thing lately where I just say yes to things that make me feel uncomfortable. And that has meant, you know, going to present TV stuff in live stream gigs and doing interviews on camera and doing live TV. So that's new. So yeah, it was a bit of a nerve-wracking experience because I haven't done it in about 10 years. I think the last time I was on, I've never been on a current affairs news show before. So that was a new experience for me. And but it was good. It was really good. Like, there was no one in the studio. it's like in the studio at 11 o'clock at night. It's yourself and Matt Cooper and a producer, and no one else is
the
in
dream.
The room. And obviously because of COVID, no one else is in the room. Even, there's no cameramen or women. It's just like, there's no camera people. It's just, we're all just there, and there's like a cameras on a rumba, and that's it. So it's a very easy way in. It's not like going on the late or anything, you know what I mean? So
it'd be really odd with cameras just moving around freely. I feel like that would scare me. You know, my fear of technology.
Well, they don't move much.
It's basically what if a camera got a gun?
They look like Daleks. You know, they're not moving fast.
Okay. But yeah, that was great.
Thanks for all your support.
I mean, my big news is that I'm propagating my jade plant. So
I mean, that was exciting for me.
It was a big day. Yeah. I sent you the pictures. I chopped off some stems from it, so they're drying out to callus on the windowsill, and hopefully I'll have about four new jade plants. soon. So that's my big news from this week. To be in it with a chance to win a jade plant, just go to patreon.com.
And we're starting a gardening side hustle podcast.
I might do. Yeah, you never know. But anyway, we're not here to talk about gardening. Nine fingers. Yeah, I like it. We're not here to talk about gardening. We're here to talk about St. Vincent.
This week's episode is all about the new St. Vincent album. It's called Daddy's Home. And we'll be talking about that. Also, yeah, we should say, obviously, I was on the TV talking about live music. Melvin Benn was on beforehand. Did you catch him saying, anyone who wants a virus can get a virus?
I did.
I think he meant vaccine, but, you know.
He's not wrong, though.
No, he's not wrong.
If you really want a virus, you can go out there and get one.
Yeah, I mean, he's propagating the idea that Electric Picnic might happen this year. Look, I don't think it's going to happen, lads, okay? Can you imagine multi-day camping festival happening within 4 months and when we're not even allowed to have like 10 people in a room
and
together?
I mean, he said on 80,000 people. The idea of 80,000 people is just terrifying to me. And you made the point actually that even picturing like a couple of thousand people in a room is so kind of beyond what we're able to conceive in our heads at the moment. I feel like if I was to go, if someone was like, right, it's completely safe, off you go to a festival, I'd walk in the gates and I'd see everybody and I'd just have an anxiety attack and go home. And I mean, that's not too far off where I was before the pandemic, but now it's like, oh boy.
I will say apparently there, you know, those pilot events are looking like they're going to happen in July. It means that we are trying to get back indoors and hopefully maybe without social distancing, if that's the plan, because we have to get, you can't realistically put those events on continuously with, I know the gradual thing is maybe a possibility, but also if we're talking about getting back to October, November, we need to rapidly get that up in terms of numbers so that it makes sense financially and commercially and all of the other reasons as well.
There are some gigs that will kind of work fine with social distancing, like a folk gig or like a more kind of low key.
Yeah, but the return of gigs, you know, will require people standing very close, too close to each other, as you normally would expect. But look, we'll leave it at there because that's a conversation for another day, because I'm sure we'll be hearing more in the next few weeks about what happens on the live front once again, because we did cover.
I look forward to your appearance in The Doll.
Yes, anytime soon. I'll be on Aroctus TV next. Okay, it's time to talk about St. Vincent's sixth album. It is called Daddy's Home. Here is the opening track from it. It's called Pay Your Way in Pain.
Shelves were all empty, so I went to the bank to check my check in. The man looked at my face, said, "We don't have a record." Oh no, you thought we had forgotten. The show is only getting started. The road is feeling like a pile. Sit down, stand up, head down, hands up, and hey, you're weighing.
So that is St. Vincent from her sixth album. It is called Daddy's Home, and the title refers to her father's release from prison after doing 10 years in prison for the manipulation of the stock market with a scheme that defrauded 17,000 investors out of 43 million. This is the first time we've heard this properly. She's managed to keep this very quiet over the years. It was broke by the
Daily Mail back when she was going out with Cara Delevingne
4 or 5 years ago. Yeah, but like still, that's a big thing to keep. Yeah. She kept it under wraps for a number of years before that. Fair play. And so the sum of the album is about, inspired by that. There's a song called Daddy's Home on it. And also a lot of the album I mean, this is coming after, we'll get maybe into a bit more about the background and where she's coming from. But I know in the winter of 2019, it says, after Mass Seduction won the Grammy for Best Rock Song, nice flex there, St. Vincent's father was released from prison and she began writing the songs that would become Daddy's Home, closing the loop on a journey that began with his incarceration in 2010 and ultimately led her back to the vinyl her dad and introduced her to during her childhood, to a record she has probably listened to more than any other music in her entire life. Music made in sepia-toned downtown New York from 1971 to 1975. And that's the majority of what we're talking about here. This is an album that wants to be self-proclaimed gritty, grimy, and sleazy. Yes, it is the kind of album that rhymes PlayStation with suicidal ideation. It is St. Vincent's 1970s New York-themed album, blonde wig and vintage suit and all with it. Before we dig into this album, which is, again, it was produced by Annie Clark and Jack Antonoff, but it sounds like one of them is leading the other. Let's just talk a bit about like where Annie Clark has gone to and where she started from. I mean, this is her sixth album. I remember back in the day when I was going to South Southwest and going to America and for music festivals and when you could do that. You know, Marry Me in 2007 and Actor in 2009, two big albums that kind of came out of the Pitchfork wave of indie artists. And Annie Clark was previously playing with the Polyphonic Spree because they're a band from Texas as well. She was in them for a while.
Who wasn't?
Yeah, I mean, we all were. You know. Yeah, she kind of cultivated this singer-songwriter indie rock style that was very reflective but also kind of erudite. And then 2011, Strange Mercy came. You start to hear some growing kind of sonic interests there, some more ambition. And then a year later, Love This Giant, the album that she made with David Byrne was released. And I think that really kind of freed her up in terms of, well, first of all, it put her on an equal pedestal with somebody who is considered, and you know, I know you were looking at YouTube videos today, and you can vouch for the thirstiness of David Byrne's audience.
I was watching a music video that the two of them had done together, and was delighted to see that there were quite a few middle-aged women in the comments, just completely thirsting over David Byrne, even after all these years. And to be fair, the man is looking well. But it just, it made me have a bit of hope. Like, yeah, you go, girls. You know? Stay thirsty. Thirsty forever for your rock stars, you know.
Yeah. And over this time, this 5-year period, I think I'd seen St. Vincent a number of times. And the stage show at Electric Picnic where herself and David Byrne played together, and it was all kind of a precursor to David Byrne's American Utopia, very much choreographed and very interesting, and a lot of movement and body. And it's kind of like Love This Giant was kind of a funky album here and there, you know, as you'd expect from David Byrne. It had that kind of flow to it. And then I think she changed tact once again on the self-titled St. Vincent. It's kind of embodying this kind of future dystopian kind of character.
Well, it's here that we start really seeing the character work.
Yeah.
Kind of get ramping up and get going, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, you know, the likes of Digital Witness and stuff like that, very much like a stylized look that she had going on, which was like really great at the time. And fuzzy guitar lines, you're really leaning into that kind of toughness and metallic noise that she can make with her guitar, and she's obviously an amazing guitarist. But, you know, following a vision of something that, you know, was sort of starting to be her own thing and feel like an artist who was truly stepping out on her own. And then, you know, the ambition just grew from there. We got Mass Seduction in 2017, kind of a lot of striking imagery with PVC kind of gear and setup. An album which was, you know, at the time, I think I really liked that album. But I've been going back and I'm interested to see how you feel about her previous work before we move on to this one at the moment. I went back and listened to that again. I was like, some of the stuff on it doesn't really work that well for me. But it was the first time. Was it the first time she worked with Jack Antonoff?
I believe it was the first time she worked with him. Yeah. I will still defend Mass Seduction, I think, because I think it's so much more than the album. I think when you're talking about St. Vincent, when you're talking about Annie Clark, you have to kind of take into account all of the aesthetics around it. And I think Mass Seduction, more than any other album until this one arguably, relied on its visual aesthetics as much as it did on its kind of sonic sound, if you'll forgive me for using that phrase. I really liked what she did visually with that. I mean, I went to see her in the Olympia for that show, and it was a really striking sort of it was a gig like no other, you know. It was very theatrical.
Yeah, I mean, that was the pinnacle of that whole era, I think, the live show.
Absolutely. And, you know, there was a short film. It opened with a short film at the beginning. It was a very strange experience to be kind of standing in a crowd and watching a film that did feel like it was going on slightly longer than you expected it to be. And then, you know, she comes out in this shocking pink PVC like dominatrix outfit. I think she said that the aesthetic for that album was dominatrix in a mental institution. And I really liked how much she kind of played with femininity and power and what power looks like and who wields it, and how sexuality and sensuality comes into that. I liked how feminine that album was, but it was almost like femininity dialed up too much, so that it's nearly sickly or false, maybe. Yeah, there was a false femininity to it that felt. I think you find it in the Mass Seduction music video, particularly. That's I think that's the one where she has the where she's in the. She's getting her face done and so on. So yeah, I really liked it. I mean, Pills remains an absolutely terrible song. It should have never happened. But yeah, everything
that was the
else
one, that was
on
the one I was like, oh, I used to like this song. I don't think I like this anymore.
No, I don't think it ever should have happened. But I mean, there are some guitar lines on that album that I still think about. I think Happy Birthday Johnny is probably the most beautiful song she's ever written. It felt like her most confident and maybe her most challenging, because at that point she had stopped just trying to kind of challenge the alternative scene, and she was moving a lot more into pop, and she was kind of challenging in that realm. And I think as well, she was challenging a lot of her own listeners. A lot of her fans didn't like Mass Seduction, and a lot of them did. And I think it's worthy of pointing out in itself that she's definitely not preaching to the choir, you know. And then now with this one, you know, Jack Antonoff's involvement with St. Vincent over the past two albums, I find very interesting. Like, if nothing else, he knows how to stick to a brief, you know. Yeah. Like Taylor Swift wanted to amp up the kind of the snarkiness on Reputation, and Jack Antonoff delivered that in spades. The same with what he did with the kind of that sickly, sugary, sweet Lover album. Norman fucking Rockwell was a brilliant brief and was therefore a brilliant album, and it was delivered really, really well from him, and he knew what to do with it. And you can't kind of accuse him of going off reef for Mass Seduction either. Whether you bought into Mass Seduction or not, he was very much kind of following her lead on that. And I think, you know, this album is nearly all brief. You know, it's you can kind of hear those excited initial meetings between the two of them. You know, Annie Clark coming into the room and saying, I want this to sound like New York, but it's the New York that you know from the movies. It's a New York that doesn't exist and never existed. It's, you know, you can picture those kind of woozy cigarette stained ceilings in like New York's apartments, the sleaze, like the kind of sleaziness of the Chelsea Hotel, the buildings and the traffics and the down and outs kind of walking around the city. It sounds like a kind of a drive around a city in the back of Robert De Niro's cab and Taxi Driver. It's all drugs and sin and hedonism, and there's that, and then there's also the sort of a bit tenuous link to the story of her father. For the amount that story has been rolled out in the PR in the run up to this album, there's really not a whole lot of daddy on Daddy's Home. There's not really much beyond the title track.
Yeah, I think it's more the sound that it was comes from the album, like her dad's record collection. That's where the inspiration comes from. So it does kind of it's like almost wrapped it fully, but it's not quite. It's like half wrapped in that idea.
But I do find it interesting that, you know, this is, there's a bit of a dissonance between those two worlds that she is, that she's kind of claiming to unite here. One is of a kind of a sleazy down and out New York City that's all cigarettes and all sin and down and out people. And then the other is her dealing with her father's very extremely white collar crime.
But she doesn't, does she really deal with it?
No. And I find those two things kind of hard to match up. I don't really know what their relationship is with each other, unless you kind of think about this album in terms of what she's doing with the sound. Is, I mean, I don't think this album is an imitation of early 70s music. I think that she's maybe taking that and she's warping it a little bit. There are times when it sounds off. There are times when, you know, the guitar sounds a little bit off, or it's a little bit discordant. And I think she's doing that. I think she's kind of playing with memory, and she's playing with those, what she remembers those albums sounding like, I suppose, and then casting new light on it, onto them, based on, you know, seeing it through a new lens of this new relationship with her father post conviction. Maybe that's what's going on, but maybe also she just wanted to do a kind of a pastiche of 1970s rock, and that's sort of fine too. I just feel like the album that I listened to and have been listening to over the past while is very different to the album that's been promised in the run-up PR. I don't know, did you find that?
Yeah, so I mean, it's hard to know. It's been a funny listen this week, listening to this album. It's kind of porous. It just keeps like coming through my ears and then like dissipating, and then I'm kind of like, what one is that again? I mean, what is very obvious is that kind of, yes, it's going for that 70s rock, R&B and soul and pop kind of Americana vibe. The New York thing is very present on it. The bright soulful backing vocals really are very different for St. Vincent, but they also remind me of, you know, when David Bowie was in the making music in the 70s, and he termed his like young Americans period as plastic soul. And it kind of feels a little bit like that as well. It's like, you know, Bowie was very knowing in what he was doing at the time, saying, oh, here I am, this white limey making black music. And there's an element of that here where you're not quite sure how much is she totally getting away with, or is she making her own? But then at the same time, you know, I hear a lot of comparisons in this album to the likes of Beck and the kind of music he made in his early career. That kind of, it's clearly indebted to kind of funk and soul, but it's kind of a whiter version, and it's therefore less funky, and therefore it's not dance music, but it is, you know, it has some nods to some of those rhythms and melodies. I think what is really interesting here is in terms of, as a guitar player, you know, she's playing the sitar a lot, and that is electric sitar. That is something that is very fresh and new for her. And it does give the album a very, you know, I mean, that a sitar is a sitar. It is synonymous with the Beatles and psychedelia and all that kind of stuff. So you get a lot of that kind of vibe in there as well throughout the album.
I find that interesting that she, I think that the sitar throughout it, when it comes up, is one of the highlights. I love hearing it, and I think all the songs that it's on, she uses it very well, and it's not over-egged like you would have gotten with kind of a lot of the Beatles stuff, which I love, but you know, they really bought a sitar and they used it, you know. There's a bit more subtlety here, but I think her using the sitar as synonymous with 1970s rock without, I guess, challenging the implications of how synonymous it is with 1970s rock, the implications being that it is appropriative and all of those sort of things, is interesting. It's interesting.
It does pose questions.
I'm not saying it's good, I'm not saying it's bad, it's just, it's there.
Same as the, you know, delving, like alluding to her father being in in prison, but not really exploring it in the same way. A lot of references here on the album, and say the song, which is actually one of my highlights, The Melting of the Sun, a love letter to a strong female artist. We've got like references to Jane Mansfield and Joni Mitchell, early 60s actually as well, Nina Simone, Pink Floyd mentioned in there, and Tori Amos as well.
This is something that Lana Del Rey did on her album earlier this year as well. I wonder, you could probably make a playlist out of the Jack Antonoff produced records that have songs that pay homage to 1960s and 1970s tragic women in rock on it. I do love that song. Actually, yeah, let's talk about some of the songs. Because we heard Pay Your Way in Pain there at the beginning. I did not like it the first time I heard it. Really, really, really do like it now. But I find it to be quite the false start to this album. When you're first going into it, if you think that the rest of the album's going to sound like Pay Your Way in Pain, I think you're going to be sorely mistaken. It's a lot more in the wheelhouse of the Mass Seduction era, or even going further back. It has those kinds of guitar sounds.
I think it's that rigidity to her, the music that she can very much like bake into that kind of era, and then like the tightness of it all. You're like, there's a lot of this album that's quite loose and rhythmically quite loose, and then, you know, it came from jamming, so it does kind of feel like that sometimes. That can be refreshing for when sometimes it's almost claustrophobic sometimes to listen to some St. Vincent songs, because she pummels everything with like sonics and low end and synthesizers and guitar sound, and you're like, whoa. Sometimes you're just like, and there is an element of that, although like she calls Pay Your Way, well, I don't know if she does or whoever the PR person does, but it's like sleazy funk. Yeah, there's an element of that kind of slouchy kind of funk thing going on, but it is a bit less obvious. And
but it's still very much a St. Vincent song, it is, you know, compared to some of the others
like,
on this.
And you do feel like she's wearing the coat of this idea of the character. You know, there's a song here called Candy Darling, which is about the New York City socialite, actress and transgender icon, and that closes out the album pretty much. And you know, it's a story that she was inspired by. It was, and she calls it a perfect Manhattan story. And I think, you know, there's a lot of that trying to embody this cinematic world that maybe doesn't exist, and or maybe never did, but is, you know, the stories we are told about, like you said, about the 70s in New York, and the people and the characters and the blonde wigs and the fancy suits and the, you know, late nights and down and out people, you know.
Yeah, so somebody in the Discord actually said that it sounds like it could soundtrack The Deuce, the TV show The Deuce, and I think that's pretty spot on. Actually, it's definitely going for a kind of cinematic lilt. I don't think it always achieves it. I think there are some songs on this album that kind of lean more towards like the prog side of things that I don't think work as well. I think they're fine as standalone songs, but they sort of jolt me out of the narrative a little bit. I think Live in the Dream is a fine song. I just cannot fathom why it's placed in between Daddy's Home and Melting Sun. It just doesn't sit right for me there. Melting Sun, though, I love. I think that's probably more more of an indicator of what you're hearing in the rest of the album than, say, Pay Your Way in Pain or Down, which is the other single, which I do really like as well. It's warm and groovy. The production's really great, but it's quite a straightforward song. It's a really straightforward melody, which we don't usually tend to get with her. We tend to get things that are a little bit more disjointed and challenging, but I think it works really well. And I am a sucker for that gospel choir throughout, and the sitar on this track is
and you did use the word groovy there. I just want to point that out.
It grooves.
Groovy.
It certainly grooves.
Living the Dream is kind of an interesting one, because, you know, I think what really lifts that song at the end, it's kind of in this psychedelic stupor, and then this her guitar is what solves the whole thing, resolves the whole thing in a really nice way.
Do you struggle at all with the arc, I suppose, in that there isn't one?
I don't know. That's what I was trying to get at. Like, and you know, I don't know if I've said this before in the podcast, and I really wish I had more often, because I wish that people PR people and media who are getting, you know, who are sending out albums would send the lyrics as well.
Send the lyrics, please.
So it's so useful to, because you get them if you buy it, but you rarely get the lyrics if you in advance, and it's it really does change things, because, you know, it really does help to kind of understand and place and contextualize the album. But so
nonetheless, though, I do think that the problem that I have with the album's arc and cohesion still exists, even if I had the lyrics in front of me. I think I just don't know what the journey is here. You know, like Saint Vincent is a character. She'll be the first person to admit that, and this is just another iteration of this character. And so if I'm going to buy into this, I sort of want an arc for this character. I want a story, and these 14 songs, and three of them are humming interludes, which could completely be just left off this. I see absolutely no reason why they need to be here. I don't know what I'm supposed to kind of feel. I don't know what resolution I'm supposed to feel by the end of it. It also doesn't really sound to me like vignettes either. Mm. I feel like it's a record that's sort of, I do think it improves with listens, like with more listens. I think it gets more expansive and you hear more of kind of her on it. But I can't help but be kind of distracted by how much she is concerned with the concept. You know, like there are times when it's really bogged down in homage to the point where I don't really know what the point is, or it lacks cohesion or an arc, like I said, or it just kind of meanders into this like overwrought territory. It is brilliantly produced. It's sharp as a tack, and I do like that about it. It's a pop album masquerading as a 70s rock. But I just kind of wish that she had a hook or a narrative to have hung it on, because just saying that you want to create a sound that is, you know, 1970s sleaze, it's like, okay, that's great. You've done that and it sounds brilliant, but what are you doing with that? And that's, I think, my problem. It's just that that extra step isn't there for me. Now, I might get there. I liked Mass Seduction the more I spent time with it. So I might find my way there. But at the moment, after, you know, eight or 10 listens or however many listens it is, I feel like it's a very stylish album. It sounds brilliant. All of the music on it sounds great. I love what she's doing with the gospel choir. I love what she's doing with the guitar. I like that it's a bit more of a grounded sound for her, but it's just that extra step into making me kind of think about something that she hasn't done. I think the only song that I felt really hit by was Melting Sun. I felt like that song has really got something to say.
And that's a Down singular as well. Song. It's a very singular song.
It is, yeah. So yeah, like it's an album that I am going to spend more time with, because I want to like it, because it sounds like the music I like.
Yeah.
But I think right now I'm just not quite there yet.
I don't know if there is no cohesive narrative in this, and maybe there's some elements here that, you know, the artist decided they wanted to do, explore this territory or this idea, but, you know, this is what they came up with. As a result, it's more the sound as opposed to a unifying, overarching theme that was throughout the album. You know, Down is a song that's essentially a revenge fantasy. Go get your own shit, get off my tit, go face your demons, check into treatment, go flee the country, go blame your daddy, just get it far away from me. That's very immediate compared to a lot of what's happening here. You're like the opening track, Pay Your Way in Pain. It's like painting the idea of a woman who's so, you know, abhorrent to other women so I went down to the park just to watch the children. The mother saw my heels and they said I wasn't welcome. And then Down and Out and Downtown, it's very much like this imagined, last night heels on the morning train and then I went back downtown. I thought it was interesting that my baby wants a baby. I read a quote from an interview that she thought she had created one of the greatest melodies in recent memory. And then she's like, oh, it's Morning Train by Sheena Easton.
Yeah. And she also does Who's Gonna Drive You Home on Down and Out.
Oh.
Oh yeah, the next time you listen to Down and Out, you'll only be able to hear Who's Gonna Drive You Home. I really like My Baby Wants a Baby. I think that's another standout on the record, because again, it is kind of, it has a theme. It's dealing with something. It's making me think about something. But a lot of the other ones I just find a little bit too meandering, a little bit too stuck in its own concept. And musically that works fine because it sounds great. It's obviously going to sound great. She has the chops to rival any of the guitarists that she's kind of emulating on this record. But yeah, I don't know. It just didn't, this doesn't speak to me as an album from an artist of the caliber that I believe St. Vincent to be, in that I'm not consistently buying into the concept here. I think it's too long.
Do you think it's too self-conscious?
No, I think it's not self-conscious enough. I really don't mind the, like I said, I don't mind the concept of, you know, 1970s. I think musically it works great, but there's, for me, not enough. I'm not exactly looking for self-reflection from her, but yeah. I'd like to hear a character, and I don't really hear a consistent voice throughout this record. I think it's a bit hodgepodge.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely have the feeling that she doesn't quite embody that character. It feels more like a secondhand account, or art made from a secondhand account, as opposed to, you know, someone mining someone's experience and creating something new out of it. So in that way, it does feel a bit more like artifice than pure, you know, I've taken this idea and created this world out of it. It's like, yeah, I can see how it works in the videos, because that's obviously very effective when you're like, well, obviously the videos are going to be very 70s themed.
Yeah.
And 70s cartoons.
And, you know, her SNL performance was outstanding as well. And it was a real testament to to what could have been the character, you know. Like I think it just didn't land on the album as a whole.
All I really remember from that is, you know, she had the backing singers. The backing singers on the album actually are Lynn Fidmont and Kenya Hathaway, who's Donnie Hathaway's daughter, and so she's on the album.
They're absolutely brilliant on it. Whenever their voices come in, they lift whatever song they're on, whether it's just for a couple of lines or whether they're right in there in the chorus, like they are for Down. I love that she embraced the kind of the soul gospel side of things, and I think that those are the elements of the album that I love the most. Just a bit disjointed, but you know, worse things have happened.
Okay, very good.
And there's no song on it that's as bad as Pills.
No.
not by a country mile. The songs on it that aren't great are just that. They're not great. But they're good. You know,
yeah, they're not skippable.
There's no bad songs on it.
You're not going to skip them.
No. No.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, in earlier on today, I did have a look at a couple of reviews, and I have to say, I really did enjoy the quietest one from Eve Willis.
Oh, me too.
Willis. I want to
there
read
are
a bit
some
of it.
Lines on that.
Yeah,
that
I mean,
are
ultimately,
really good.
Yeah. Spoiler alert for the actual thing. I mean, she is a fan of St. Vincent and does kind of roll back on this a bit and like, look, this is what I like about her. But I love the first line. There's a certain kind of person who thinks that living in New York is an adequate substitute for a personality. And you're like, oh, this is going to be a takedown. It's not so much, she does go on to say, in an album that is more shtick than sleaze, the listener wades through endless references to a downtown that only exists in the imagination of a wet-eyed Scorsese fanatics. Days blonde but drug problems, absent brooding daddies, these mean and horrible streets. St. Vincent, was it sleazy when you collaborated with Vaux Clicquot to open a pop-up champagne bar in Covent Garden? I just want to know.
Unbelievable. Absolutely stunning. Brilliant.
But I really enjoyed that. So that's worth
having. Yeah, it's an excellent review, actually. I really enjoyed that review because she can say all of those things and then still say that she liked the album.
That's kind of what
being like a pop critic is. It's like, oh God, I hate you, but you're good. So
yeah, and I think that's kind of it. If you want a high production, catchy album that's cheesy, fun, and occasionally a bit naff, get Daddy's Home. So
yeah.
I think that's kind of how we land on it as well. I would say that's fair enough. So yeah, play a song. Let's play The Method of the Sun, since it's one of our
Say Joni ain't no phony, smoking reds with furry sang the blues. My Marilyn shot her heroin. Hell, she said it's better than abuse. So who am I trying to be? A bends out beauty queen. It's just the melting of the sun.
The album is St. Vincent and it is called Daddy's Home. So thanks Andrea for your thoughts on that. What have we got left? I have a few things to plug, actually. Well, first of all, of course, our Patreon, patreon.com/909. Nice chats on the Discord as ever. Do join us. It is good crack, and it is my water cooler for work, and I really enjoy it. Obviously last week we podcast came out on Monday or Tuesday, whatever that was, because I was in Derry. We were doing a live stream show which will be going out in June. We've got two Fridays in June, 18th of June and 25th of June, live from a beautiful venue called St. Columb's Hall in Derry. We got Nilo and Genova on the 18th and Soda Blonde and Fia Moon on the 25th. It was just such a lovely thing to be able to do, Andrea. Just like go to a gig, go to a venue, watch some bands, interview them, chat to them, see people. I saw people in real life. It was amazing.
Very, very good.
And it was really refreshing. And then something else which I worked on last year for a long of the last few months of the year is going out. As of Monday, it starts next week. It is going out on 2FM on the at 8 p.m. It is basically a documentary style series about the music business and advice from loads of artists. We spoke to loads of bands and bookers and producers and managers and people who work in the industry, lawyers and all that kind of stuff about, you know, breaking into the music biz, making a career out of it, all that kind of stuff. It is very obviously called The Music Biz, but look, I think it's actually really good, and it's on 2FM starting next week. I think that's on next 2 weeks on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, so do look out for that. I think it goes out during Tara Stewart's show. Anyway, so that was something that we were working on a lot on last year, so delighted to finally see it now. So yeah, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, 17th, 18th, 19th of May, and then the following week as well, there's 6 episodes in total. So yeah, do look out for that. What about yourself? Anything you'd like to plug?
As usual, andrea-cleary.ghost.io is my newsletter. I will be sending out a new edition over the next few days. I read Annie McManus's novel, who is Annie wider Mac. Known as Annie Mac. I have a review of it in the Business Post this Sunday in the book section. So you can go there for my thoughts on it. Spoiler, it's very, very good. I would recommend pre-ordering it. It has a beautiful cover as well. It's a really great
very
book.
Good.
I think, nothing else to plug yet.
good. Well, that's all right. Yet. Yeah. Ooh.
Ooh.
Teasing.
What could that mean?
You're teasing. I like it.
I'm teasing.
Very good.
Yeah, no. That's it. Everyone should be watching Taskmaster so that they can talk
I started watching Taskmaster because I remember.
Niall, tell me all your feelings.
I'm halfway through the season, I think.
Did you get to the episode yet?
I don't think so.
Do you know what I mean by that? Okay, no. Then you haven't.
No, okay. I don't know.
This is the new season you're watching, yeah?
Yes, with the...
They're all brilliant on it.
Yeah, I haven't seen... Ed Wozniak is his name, isn't it? Yeah.
Mike Wozniak.
Mike.
Yeah.
They said
my
Ed,
husband.
Your husband.
My husband.
Would you say that if you didn't have a lovely mustache?
No. I've seen pictures of him without the mustache and I think that he is a man who needs to have a mustache. No, he's an incredibly handsome man. He has two podcasts that I've been listening to. One is called the St. Elwick's Neighborhood Association Newsletter Podcast, which is absolutely hilarious. Just listen to. And then he has a new podcast called Three Bean Salad. And it's him and two other comedians just chatting stuff. And I know there's enough of those sorts of podcasts in the world, but this one has Mike Wozniak in it and he's a very, very funny man. So I've been enjoying that as well. There's only two episodes of Taskmaster left and I genuinely don't know what I'm going to do when it's over. It's the thing that's been keeping me afloat.
Have you watched
it's
all of them yet?
Been keeping me sane. I've seen every single episode of Taskmaster, I reckon more than once. It is, in my opinion, the best thing on television. There's nothing better than it. So, and I'm surprised that I like Lee Mack in this series because I'm not usually a big fan of his. But
I thought he was going to be quite annoying. He's not actually that annoying.
Yeah, he's grand. He's fine.
I think he's just an old school comedian, so I thought he was going to be real old school, but he actually doesn't seem so bad.
It's good. A testament to the format, I think, that they don't really have a chance to get in like pre-prepared one-liners and things. So it's good.
I listened to yesterday that I would recommend everyone have a listen to. It is the Second Captain's podcast episode, which interviews Owen Keegan, the Dublin City Council chief executive, about the plans for Dublin's whitewater rafting in the IFSC, which is just ludicrous and ridiculous that is even happening or even still on the cards. But you should actually listen to the interview because he sounds so rattled in it. And he sounds like he's shuffling papers and he's like, right. He's pretty passive regressively saying, right. And he just comes across like, do you remember the, was it the Maria Bailey interview on right away? She was like, Sean. And like, it's a bit like that. It's kind of like, right. He's like, are you trying to convince us? Or you're trying to convince yourself. But that is an interesting listen. I would recommend.
Still can't believe that's a thing. Something that I did this week that I'd encourage people to do is get in touch with your local TDs about housing, ask them what they're doing. Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, my local Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil TDs got back to me with a load of pre-prepared stuff, and that's fine, but you know, it just let them know that you're thinking about housing because this is a thing that's happening. There's a mobilization happening, and just it's a good thing to do is to let them know that this is going to be a factor for you when we do get to vote. Little plug for emailing your TD. And what one of my local TDs as well is Richard Boyd Barrett. So I was just like, Richie, you're doing a good job. So
stay cool. You know, that comes after the ASRI report saying that, you know, young people in Ireland are actually worse off than their parents official, which is, you know, pretty depressing. But like, we didn't know that already.
And shocking.
shocking reveal, not really. And then, you know, the other thing I've been thinking about a lot at the moment is you know, culture and the erosion of culture in this city, and you know, especially with that like whitewater rafting stuff, and then, you know, the dead house on the Keys is, you know, the house that the Joyce house that is being sold. Well, it was sold, but it's now been approved by on Bord Pleanáil to be turned into a hostel, which is just ludicrous.
Yeah, and they were asked about it, or they gave some statement that it was along the lines of like, oh, of course we're going to pay homage to it, maybe in the cafe. And it's like, okay, really? Like, look, again,
depressing.
Chats for another episode, but something that you can do this week is email your TD and let them know that you are worried about this, because remember, they are public servants and that's what their job is to listen to you, listener. Yeah. So go and email them, even if they're in a party that you don't agree with or vote for, because they
also
still need to listen to you.
You know, get involved in the Ireland Palestinian solidarity campaign. Now's the time to do
100%.
It. 100% before. So
yeah.
You know, there's a lot going on in the world, and sometimes we do ignore it in a podcast, but you know, it is some things can't really be ignored all the time.
Maybe in the show notes we can leave a link to that housing petition that is going around that's calling for a referendum on the right to housing to be put into the constitution, and also maybe some links to where you can donate to support Palestinians. Who are not having a good time right now. So okay. Politics corner with Andrea and Niall.
That's all right.
Yeah.
Are you listening to anything else at the moment? Anything else we should mention?
I've been listening to do you know what I haven't been doing is listening to a lot of Spotify. I've just sort of been after our Spotify episode, I've just not been on Spotify a whole lot and sort of going into Bandcamp and stuff and listening elsewhere. So yeah, listening a lot. Couldn't tell you any of the names of the bands I'm listening to because I've never heard of them before.
Yeah,
so.
I love the new Bantam song, New Leaf. It's great.
Yeah, very good.
There is a Lauer Make It Stay song that I posted a while ago. Jared Jansen did a remix of it. I've been really enjoying this. I don't know much about her, but I've been meaning only in the last day or so, really. Her name is Aruj Aftab. Do you know? Have you heard of this? I think Pitchfork gave it a great review. The album is called Vulture Prince, and a very interesting. She's a Brooklyn-based singer and composer, but who was born in Pakistan and has a lot of that kind of heritage and sound in the music, but very folky as well. So that's something I've been enjoying this week. Very different kind of style than what I'd normally be delving into, but I think it's getting a lot of notice at the moment. So we're delving into that. Her name is Aruj Aftab. Vulture Prince is the album, so you can search for Vulture Prince.
Sweet.
Right, and that's it for us this week, I'd say. Thank you all for
listening, everyone.
And thanks for supporting us on the Patreon. Your support is always evergreen. Appreciated. Thanks, everybody.
Bye. Bye, bye, bye. You're great. You look great today.
Bye. Talk to you next week.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.